make life easier for ourselves, we are very eager to define for each other what is the role of a husband and what is the role of a wife. But when we look at the Bible, we don't find roles clearly prescribed. In fact, they can be different and are different from marriage to marriage.
Welcome again to Christianity at Work, a radio ministry of Mackenzie Study Center in Eugene, Oregon. In this program, Dr. Jack Crabtree and marriage and family therapist Christine Barber continue to discuss the differences between men and women. Although men and women are profoundly unique from each other, do husbands and wives have specific roles to play in a marriage? Does the Bible direct women to stay home and men to go to work? Are women not to pursue careers? Are men not to stay home with the kids? Here now are Jack and Christine.
In this program, we're going to address the roles of men and women in marriage, how they are different, how the Bible defines them. I grew up in a family that had very traditional roles. My father went out to work, worked all day, came home. My mother took care of the kids, generally speaking, and did the cooking and cleaning. However, my response as I grew up was not to want to have the traditional role. In fact, I thought that being a woman who stayed at home and cooked and cleaned was very demeaning. I wanted to be a man. I wanted to have the role of a man in my life. Then when I became a Christian, I was told that that was wrong. Jack, can you clarify, from a biblical perspective, what are the roles that God wants a man to have, and what are the roles that God wants women to have in the context of a marriage and a family? Was my early training right, or was it not?
I think the answer to that is rather complex, because on the one hand, I think there's some truth to the traditional roles, and we can talk about that. On the other hand, I think we have to come to terms with the fact that the Bible is really not prescribing roles for husband and wife in marriage. I need to make a distinction between what we might call roles in marriage on the one hand and responsibilities on the other hand. We've had several programs in the past on the headship of the husband and the biblical perspective on the husband's headship and the woman's being a partner to her husband in a marriage. Those are different and distinctive responsibilities. So I'll use the term responsibilities to describe the headship and the helper function within a marriage. The responsibilities that the Bible prescribes do not at the same time clearly and unmistakably define roles for the husband and wife. And what I mean by roles are things like who keeps the finances, who keeps the books in the marriage, who has what job, who does what in the home, who does what outside the home, who mows the lawn, who does the garden, those sorts of things.
So what do we do responsibility?
Exactly, yeah, the division of labor type issues. The Bible really is not prescribing that. Culture prescribes that, and we can decide to what extent we want to respect our culture in that regard. Culture very clearly prescribes that for us. Our family values, our family upbringing, the culture around us sort of send messages to us about who should be doing what in the marriage. But we need to be clear that whatever we think about roles because of our culture, it's not because they have been prescribed by the scriptures.
So you're saying, for example, that our culture has prescribed the role, or at least traditionally has, maybe not so much today, very similar to what I grew up in. The man goes out to work and the woman stays at home.
Right.
You're saying that is not a biblical prescribed responsibility. And yet that's what I learned as a Christian, in my early days of being a Christian, that's the responsibility that I had.
Well, I think there's two things at play there. One is a confusion in the Christian culture between the responsibility and function of headship for the man and the responsibility and function of being the helper for the woman that we've talked about in the past. They're confusing that with roles. They're taking that biblical teaching and trying to articulate it in terms of what roles a husband has. And I would argue that that's just a mistake, that there's a lot more flexibility in roles within the context of the biblical worldview than there is on the issue of headship. That's one thing that's playing into that. I think the second thing that's playing into that is that from a
Could you wait just a minute? Sure. For those people who don't know, we have done a series of four-part series on headship and submission. So to get a much bigger understanding of what you just said, it would be important for people to listen to that and I think be very helpful.
Yeah. But there's another consideration as well, and that the Bible, I think, indirectly speaks to the issue of roles in a different way. And here, let me explain. The Bible has a certain view of God and a certain view of the created order, namely that God is a rational God who created the cosmos to be a rational cosmos. And what I mean by rational is he created different things with different functions, with different purposes in mind, that have a different nature and a different character to them. And the role that they were to play, or the function that they were to play in the created order, is sort of corresponds to the nature and essence of those things. So if he created me as a human male, and then he says the human male is to be the head in his household, presumably a rational God would create the male psyche in a way that is somehow suited to fulfilling that function and to taking on that responsibility of being the head. And he would create the female psyche to somehow be particularly suited to taking on the responsibility and having the function of being the helper in the relationship. If not, then this is a really crazy universe. This is a really bizarre universe that God would command the husband to take primary responsibility in the marriage relationship on the one hand and make his psyche completely unsuited for that, or vice versa. So it just is simply an underlying assumption, I think, of the biblical worldview that God would create sexual differences between men and women to make them suited to the particular responsibilities that he's given them. Furthermore, he's created women biologically to be mothers of children, to bear and to conceive, to bear and to nurture children. It would only make sense that he would create the female psyche to make them best suited to the role of being mothers, and that he would make the masculine psyche best suited to the role of being fathers. That would only make sense. Otherwise, again, it's a really crazy cosmos that he would put the mothering instincts in the male and the fathering instincts in the female. That wouldn't make any sense. So I think we can take for granted, as a kind of underlying assumption in the biblical worldview, that my created nature puts certain boundaries on me. So my point is that whatever we do in defining the roles of a husband and wife in marriage, or a mother and father in marriage, it only makes sense from a biblical point of view that those roles are going to be informed by the reality of sexual differences. We talked last time about the existence of sexual differences, and I suggested that I think those differences are very mysterious, something that we cannot ultimately analyze and we cannot ultimately articulate. I don't think we can come up with an adequate theory of sexual differences where we define what those differences are, but we know they exist. They are a reality in our lives, and we need to spend the rest of our lives as husband and wives getting to know those differences. But even though we can't articulate them, I think we can recognize them as a reality and realize that the roles that we define for one another in marriage are going to have to be realistic and reasonable in the light of those sexual differences.
Let's come back in a few minutes. I'm very interested in learning about how that works out in real life.
We'll get back to Jack and Christine in a moment. First, let me say something about our two participants. Christine Barber has been a marriage and family therapist for over 20 years. Every day, she works alongside people who desperately need the application of biblical Christianity in their lives. Not only as a therapist, but also as a wife and mother, Christine sees the radical message of the Bible and the truth it contains, providing the only real foundation upon which people can understand their lives and have hope in this world. Jack Crabtree is a professional philosopher, theologian, and teacher. For several years, he was on the pastoral staff of Peninsula Bible Church in Palo Alto, California. He has been teaching at McKenzie Study Center, as well as the University of Oregon, Oregon State University, and Gutenberg College for a number of years. He is one of the pastors at Reformation Fellowship in Eugene, Oregon. Jack's passion is first to understand the biblical text, then to apply that text and its principles in a consistent way to everyday life.
Before we took a break, Jack, you were saying, if I understand it correctly, that God really hasn't spelled out in the Bible exactly what our roles are in our marriage, exactly what we do, how we divide the labor in our marriage, who does the children, who does the work, who does what, isn't really defined. However, at the same time, you said that God made men to be men, men to be fathers. He made women to be women and women to be mothers. And that we somehow will work out our relationship in such a way, that is, we need to work out a relationship in such a way that we live in relationship or in line with the femaleness that we are or the maleness that we are. But Jack, what in the world does that look like?
Okay. Well, see, I think the traditional view is trying to come to terms with that. It may not have been adequate and it may not have come to terms with that very well, but I think it was trying to come to terms with, for example, the reality that mothers make better mothers than fathers. If someone is going to be home and nurturing the children, and especially in the early stages of their development, is going to be nurturing their growth in the early stages, who better than their mother? I think that's what the traditional view, the traditional division of roles, was trying to come to terms with. And I have to say, that seems really right to me. It seems commonsensical to me. It seems consistent with the overall biblical picture and biblical revelation, even though it's not strictly prescribed by the Bible.
And intuitively, it looks right, or it feels right to me. Also, looking at nature, I see that the female takes care of the child or the newborn, and the male animal goes out and, I think, brings in the booty for the family, brings in the food.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a good model? Are we like the animals?
Well, I think we have to be very careful making those kinds of arguments, because animals are animals and human beings are not. I mean, that it's important to recognize that in very many ways, human beings are a whole different aspect of God's creation. And we really need to take our cues not from the animal kingdom per se, because you find all kinds of bizarre things in the animal kingdom. You can find counterexamples where the male really ends up with the nurturing role. But that is not an argument that because some obscure animal somewhere, the male takes care of the children, that's okay for human beings.
Well, you know, that's exactly the argument that was given to me, by the way, when I became a Christian. I remember, I can see the woman talking to me right now, and she said, you know, the birds? Picture the little birds with their mouths open in the nest. And who's coming to feed those mouths? Well, it's the mother bird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I thought, okay, well, that's the role that I must have.
Yeah, see, unfortunately, I think that's a fallacious argument, because granted, that may be true of birds, but I ain't a bird. I'm a human being, and I need to come to terms with what God created a human male and a human female to be. Now, I think the case can get made that throughout human history and throughout the trajectory of human history, what we find is that all cultures everywhere have come to terms with the fact that mothers make better mothers. And I just think that's a commonsensical reality.
But that's kind of an argument that doesn't make a lot of sense to me, or it's a statement that doesn't make a lot of sense to me, because of course mothers make better mothers and fathers make better fathers, but we need to define what's a mother do and what's a father do to nurture their children. It isn't as though, I'm sure you're not saying, well, mothers are the sole nurturer of the children. They're
not. No.
And men also have the responsibility to nurture their children. What does that look like exactly, though, is a big question for us.
Yeah, precisely. And it's going to be this, we're going to have the same problem here ultimately that we have in defining sexual differences. That ultimately the difference between the nurture that a mother gives and the nurture that a father gives, although we can maybe say some things that kind of get at it, ultimately is probably going to be just as impossible to define as the sexual differences themselves. But I think, is it not commonsensical that a mother has a kind of bond and connectedness with her children, a different sort of bond, a different kind of connectedness with her children than a father does?
You know, I think about that, and, you know, I really don't know. I intuitively think so, but I knew what it was like to nurse my children. It was a very bonded connection.
Right.
I liked it. It was warm. It was something I looked forward to. It was me being so close to my children. But do I know what it was like for my husband not to have that? Well, I couldn't get into his mind and his soul and his body and know. So I would think it's really different. It seems really different. But is he connected to my children in a way that I'm not?
Well, probably so. I mean, certainly he is connected in a way that you are not. I'm not a sociologist. I'm just an observer of human experience, a rather casual observer who thinks philosophically is what I am. But
you mean you fumble through life and
fumble through life, yeah. I can't quote research or anything, but just as a casual observation, when you look at broken homes, for example, more often than not, it's the mother who is less likely to abandon her children and walk away from her children. Now, that obviously not without exception. And we live in a broken world where people's psyches are beaten to death by their own choices and by being the victims of other people's choices. People do bizarre, weird, perverse things. But as a normal rule, it would look to me like women naturally feel a connection with their children that drives them to take care of them, nurture them, protect them, with a kind of bond that's much less breakable than the bond that a father has with their children. In other words, it looks to me like instinctually women are bonded to their children in a way that's not as instinctual for fathers. They need to take it on as a moral responsibility that doesn't come quite so organically to them, perhaps. Something like that is going on. And I think that's what traditional cultures are trying to come to terms with, is that psychological, biological reality that women have a kind of connection to nurture their children that fathers do not have.
So I'm kind of left here, though, with not a very good definition as a wife or as a husband of exactly how to work out our responsibilities in our marriage. I'm thinking of a very newly married couple trying to figure out who does what and being somewhat confused. It seems like a real gray area to me.
Well, I think here's where I'm coming from. We live in a time and a place in the culture that is encouraging us to make a statement. So the pressure would be on a young mother, for example, even though she might have all kinds of instincts to want to quit her job, for example, and stay home and be with her children and bond with her children and nurture them. We live in a time and place in a culture that is perhaps even unique in this regard, that she feels cultural pressure to not do that, to go against whatever it is that she's feeling in order to make some kind of statement, in order to stand up against what she perceives to be simply social pressure, traditional social pressure, to stay at home and be a mother and abandon a career or whatever. I guess what I'm saying is we shouldn't so lightly and easily discard centuries of human tradition and so dismissively say that's just social pressure. Maybe it's just social pressure. On the other hand, maybe it's the pressure of her own sexuality. Maybe it's the God-given pressure of something instinctual within her that God put there, and that's why she wants to stay home. It has nothing to do with copping out to cultural pressure. It has everything to do with doing what her own being is crying out for her to do. Now, on the other hand, if she doesn't feel that pressure, then it's something that she and her husband can take a look at and work out how are we going to divide the labor here and take care of our children and so on. I think there is no clear-cut biblical prescription about that. Certain things seem to be taken for granted, but there's certainly no clear-cut prescription in the Bible about how we divide our labors.
You're saying that it really depends a lot on the individual and their sense of responsibility, their sense of pull in one direction or another. And it also depends on our maleness and femaleness, which is hard to define. And it also depends on how the man and woman in their marriage can work it out.
Right.
In my marriage, for an example, my husband and I worked it out so that we both share the responsibility of the income. We both work part-time. I take care of the children some, and he takes care of the children some. There's been various times in my life when I felt more like I wanted to work more, and other times when I felt more like I wanted to be in the role of just being a mother. There have been periods of time when I've just not worked at all outside the home, and I've just been with the children. I'm finding that that's changing some now, that as I grow older, I'm interested less in work, and even part-time work becomes something that I'm less drawn to. I don't have an interest in being a part of professional groups or professional training, or those kinds of things have become very diminished for me. And I want to be more and more at home with my children. It's a real draw for me. And it's real great that my husband is supportive of me in going in either direction. And we do it with a lot of thought and consultation of each other, but there's a real fluidity in our relationship with one another and in our choices of what we do.
So I think the important thing is that whatever we end up doing, we are not acting out of rebellion against what God created me to be and what God made me to be. I think that's the problem with modern culture, is that our whole culture is in a kind of systematic rebellion against God, and that manifests itself in this kind of rebellion against sexual differences. So we have a culture that makes the absurd, the absolutely ridiculous claim that there is no difference between men and women except differences that have been foisted on us and forced on us and enforced on us by our culture, that those are the only differences, but there's no inherent or intrinsic differences between us. Everybody knows that that's ridiculous. But we tell ourselves that lie and embrace that mythology as a way of supporting this rebellion against what God has created. And what God has created is for women to be women and mothers, and for men to be men and fathers. How we work that out is something that everyone ultimately is going to have to confront themselves, especially in the modern day, in the modern culture, because we don't have a culture that is giving us clear signals about that.
Well, Jack,
but we must not allow my rebellion to dictate where I go.
Okay, I'm really in agreement with you. I can't let my rebellion just dictate where I go and just clench my fist and say, I'm going to do this no matter what. On the other hand, you were saying, Jack, that everybody knows that men are men and women are women and there are differences. Well, I don't agree with you. I think maybe deep down in the core of our soul we might know that, but there's certainly people who don't know that because they've been in an environment or been trained or been in a situation such that they really don't see big differences. They've been blinded to it. They're dulled to it. I think I did, as I was growing up, know there was a difference. As I said in a previous program, I grew up feeling kind of neuter. I wasn't man and I wasn't woman. I definitely was a woman, but it wasn't really my favorite thing to identify myself with a woman, so I identified more with men. And I've gone through my life having this sense of wanting to have the traditional role of a man. I was taught that that was better, that really was a much, that really a woman's role was somewhat demeaning, actually. And so I went into the marriage and into my adult life thinking of women in the traditional role as being in a kind of demeaned position, kind of a less than position. And after I had my first child, I was surprised by the draw I had toward nurturing my children. I remember walking into work that I had taken 6 months off of and bringing my baby and saying, "You guys just eat your hearts out because I get to be a mom." And I just could hardly believe that I said that when I walked out the door. But I felt it. My baby was maybe 2 weeks old at the time. And I had this real draw of femininity, of sexuality, of mothering that I had never known and never anticipated before.
Right.
It came alive in me. But it's taken a long time for the dulling that I had toward my sexuality to become less dull, for me to see more clearly and for me to understand and appreciate and like being a woman. And of course, that has influenced the way I have worked and the direction I have gone in my life. God has had to teach me over time to be different than what I grew up to be.
But I guess I stand corrected. I think there are a lot of people who don't understand that. But I guess what I'm getting at is, I think you've called it a dullness, a blindness. I think that's exactly what it is. It's by lying to ourselves that we do not understand or are confused about or are insensitive to sexual differences. That if we would just open our eyes and look at human experience and look at my own human experience and look at the way I interact with other people, I would see myself treating men and women differently and recognizing the difference between them. But we, on the one hand, in kind of intuitively, instinctively learn the difference and work with the difference, and then we turn around and tell ourselves there is no difference and confuse ourselves about that. I mean, in the way we think about our lives and our goals and our hopes and dreams and so on. And I would argue, you know, maybe you'll deny this, but I would argue that probably to a certain extent you were lying to yourself early on about whether you were really made to be a woman, whether you were really made to be a mother, whether that would be interesting to you and fulfilling to you. And you were getting a lot of help from your culture telling you that those men are just trying to enslave you by making you a mother and a wife and so on.
Well, I didn't actually have any men in my life that tried to enslave me to do that. In fact, I had big influences in my life that said, you know, go out, get a career, do the job. And my husband was not going to be telling me what to do. So he wasn't an influence telling me how to live my life. He let me make the decisions before God.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, I like this discussion. Let's get back to it in a few minutes.
Okay.
Jack and Christine will return in a moment. Almost 20 years ago, the Mackenzie Study Center in Eugene, Oregon, was created as a place where people could come and seriously think about their faith. Over the years, Mackenzie has grown in different directions and gone through various changes, but one thing has remained constant, a passionate love of God's Word and the truth it contains. The Mackenzie staff is dedicated to studying and understanding the Bible. Individually, they want to know what the biblical authors meant when they wrote the Bible. They want to peel away layers of false teaching and get to the very heart of the biblical message. And this is not easy. It's hard work. It requires years of dedication and the willingness to believe what the Bible actually says rather than what they might want it to say. These men and women also believe their studies and their teaching are not perfect. They know their understanding is limited, and they may be wrong, but they trust God to give them the eyes to clearly see His truth. They also encourage others to join them in their efforts, to ask them tough questions, to challenge their conclusions, and to take the Bible seriously. More importantly, they desire that all may come to the wonderful saving truth of the gospel. Much of the teaching done at Mackenzie is available on tape and can be ordered from the tape catalog. Papers and the free monthly newsletter, News and Views, are also available. Information about how you can find out more about Mackenzie Study Center and its ministries will be given at the end of today's program. Now, let's return to Jack and Christine.
Before the break, Jack, you said, weren't you lying to yourself? Or do you see that perhaps you were lying to yourself, that you didn't see the distinction between men and women? And when you said that word, it hit me. And I started... Initially, I thought, what do you mean lying to myself? Of course I wasn't lying to myself. But I think that's just my pride thinking I don't want to see myself as a liar. And certainly I am a liar, so I'll take that back. But I think one of the things that could be confusing about that is I was not actively lying to myself.
Not consciously.
I was not consciously lying to myself.
Right.
I was not saying, now, Christine, you see something, but you want to pretend like it's not true, so lie about it. That wasn't true at all. I learned to not be conscious about what was out there and what seems very obvious and very clear to me today. Do you understand that?
Yeah, and see, from a Christian perspective, that and we need to come back to that, there's so many things that we lie to ourselves about, but not consciously. Not, you know, we don't set out and see clearly that that we are evil people, and then turn around and say, "But I'm going to tell myself I'm not an evil person." It just doesn't occur to us to take seriously the prospect that I am a morally unworthy evil rebel against God. But what we come to learn in time is that that's exactly what I am, and I've been that all along. Why couldn't I see that before? Well, it's because the Bible describes my heart as deceitful. That's what I mean by lying to myself, is that I'm, from the core of my being, I'm deceiving myself. And the deception goes so deep that I'm not even really conscious of being a deceiver.
Mm-hmm. I have become blind. I have become dulled to the reality of things. And I was listening to my husband teach last Sunday. He did a really great job, by the way.
I'm sure he did. Good.
And he was talking about Romans 1, mm-hmm. I believe, and it talks about how what happened in the fall, what's the problem, is that we have a depraved mind, such that we cannot see reality anymore. And that's what you're talking about
exactly,
here.
Exactly.
That carries itself out in our lives over and over again. Where reality is clear, we don't see it. And apart from the Holy Spirit coming in and changing our hearts and our minds to be able to see reality, we don't. And so I really see that God has come into my heart and has changed me to being able to see what a woman is. He has helped me see that reality, an important reality. It works itself out in my marriage, in my relationships with men and friendships generally, in my relationship with my children, in my parenting. It's very, very important for me to have understood that. And I'm real thankful that God's taken lots of those blinders off my eyes. But it's taken many years.
Yeah.
And it wasn't because I was openly rebellious and didn't want to see. My culture, my environment at home taught me something different.
Your actual experience of yourself relating to your children and your husband is what taught you something different, you mean? In the context of life, you became wiser.
Those are the tools that God used.
Yeah. Yeah, we start off foolish. We start off with this depraved mind, believing absurd, ridiculous, stupid things. And what I mean by that is that if we just could allow the evidence of life experience to speak for itself, we would think very differently about ourselves in our life. But the fact is, we are so ready to believe absurdities about ourselves. So, for example, that's what I was getting at earlier. If we would just all open our eyes, the fact that men are different from women ought to be as clear as the nose on my face. And yet, we are so ready to believe, oh, there's no difference, except superficial biological differences, physiological differences. That's the only difference. Well, what an absurd thing to believe if we were to look at the actual evidence of reality itself. But we're not willing to look at the evidence of reality itself. We are foolish people who would rather believe these deceptions. And part of the wisdom that we grow in as believers, as we go through the process that the New Testament calls sanctification, as God opens my eyes to see, part of what my eyes are open to see is just the reality of the created order, the reality of my created sexuality, and what that means and what that looks like and what that is. And I think that's what you're describing, that as you become more and more sanctified, more and more have your eyes open and more ready to face into the reality as it is, you notice that you are actually a woman, and that's different. And I would say, I think the same thing for me. I've become more and more ready to see that I'm a man, and that's different, and that means something, and I have to take that seriously.
So I think what we're saying here, Jack, is that there aren't any particular responsibilities that a man or a woman has that we can just define and put down in black and white and write a book about. But the responsibility that we have is to be responsible toward God, to learn, to be open, to be aware that we're blind people that need to see better, and to be watching God and working alongside God as we become different, as we see different, and maybe as we see different, our rules will change, the responsibilities will change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's right, and I think that's what you've described from your own experience, is that as you've come to understand more what contribution you make to the family as a woman, you are more and more eager and ready and interested in taking responsibility to make that contribution. And what does that mean? Well, it may mean going part-time. It may mean not being involved over here so that I can be more involved with my children over here. It may mean not doing this so that I can make this contribution to the life of my husband, and so on. The same would be true of a man, that as he comes to understand more his role and what contribution he makes to the family, how at what level he's valuable in the lives of his children and the life of his wife, that he needs to start making choices that I really shouldn't be involved over here. I really need to carve out some time here that I can make this contribution to my wife and my children.
Mm-hmm.
That's how our roles will get shaped, by the wisdom that comes from understanding what God created me to be and what contribution he intended me to make.
Thank you. It's a really helpful discussion for me. I've never had this before and only intuitively gone along with what feels right to me. You know, Jack, as we're talking, though, we're talking a lot about being mothers and being fathers, kind of the parenting role. And I'd like to switch it back to the husband and wife role, because we were talking about marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And talk about some of the transitions that I've been through, and perhaps you can talk about some that you've been through as I've understood what being a woman is, and perhaps as you've understood what being a man is in the context of our marriages.
Okay.
Last week, Jack, we were talking a lot about sexuality and sexual differences between men and women. One of the things that doesn't get talked about a lot is sexuality, and I know we're going to have a whole series on that, but I'm thinking about something in that regard now and wanted to bring it up. You were saying that one of the things that are different about men and women is that men tend to have a real drive towards sexuality that is uniquely different than women tend to have, and I really see that as being true. Men seem to be, as a general rule, much more stimulated by what's going on visually, by their own internal sexual drive, and women don't seem to be as interested. One of the things that I've had to really learn in my marriage is that about my husband, that he and I are different in that regard. One of the ways that I dealt with it early on was just to kind of ignore it, to say he's different, but I really, you know, oh well. As I've matured, it's become real clear to me that it's important for me to develop and understand and work with my own sexuality and my own sexual response to my husband. It needs to be something that I take seriously, something that is important to him, and something that needs to become important to me. And it has, over the years, become much more important, such that my sexual response is very different now than it was previously. And that's a real important way to be a woman with my husband.
Mm-hmm. And I would say exactly the flip side of that was true for me, is that I had to come to terms with my wife's sexuality and understand that she was not just like me. She was not a man. Therefore, I could not expect her to...
Well, you didn't want her to respond. You wanted her maybe to respond like a man would. And she, like myself perhaps, had different response. She had a female response rather than a male response.
Exactly. And you don't... I wasn't really adequately prepared for that. I mean, I think I had even heard that, but I didn't really know what that meant until, in the context of the marriage relationship, working out our life together, I learned that she was different than me. She wasn't just a clone of me. She wasn't just the mirror image of me. She was fundamentally different than I was. And I had to understand that. I like that phrase that Peter uses, and I think it's 1 Peter, husbands, live with your wives in an understanding way. And I think that's full of meaning.
Mm-hmm.
That we need to recognize that we are very, very different creatures in important ways, and I need to understand that difference and live with it.
One of the phrases that you said just now, and it was just an aside, but I'm going to take it up for a minute. You said, I wasn't adequately prepared. You know, Jack, I don't think I was adequately prepared for nothing. not because my parents necessarily didn't do their job. I think they did a real good job in some ways and didn't teach me things in other ways. But there's no way that our parents can teach us all that we need to know to be prepared for life. Life is preparing us for life each day. I'm prepared at 40 to be 50 and 50 to be 60. And there's no way around it. Right. I'm just not going to be ready. And, you know, as a younger person, I looked at people who knew things and thought, how come I don't know that? How come I'm not there yet? What's wrong with me? And what's wrong was at 20, I wasn't 30.
Right.
And so there's a lot that we don't know, and there's just a lot that we have to just keep learning and be patient with. You know, I wanted to talk about ways that I've grown up in my femaleness and how that impacts itself on my relationship with my husband. Another thing that's changed in me is that I've become a person who has become softer. I was pretty hard, pretty matter-of-fact, pretty non-nurturing. And over the years, being a female includes being a nurturer, being a warm person, being a softer person, being a more vulnerable person. In fact, a lot of that is what it means to be human. But in a uniquely female way, I've learned about that because I am a woman learning those things as a woman and have brought that into my relationship with my husband and offered that to my husband. I'm saddened as I think of the years previously where I've been a really hard person. And I'm real glad for the fact that God's teaching me and is in the process of teaching me to soften up. I need that. I want that. My husband wants that.
Well, if I could, before we run out of time, I'd like to bring it back to the original issue of roles within a marriage. Fundamentally, what I'm trying to say is that these sexual differences are realities, objective realities that God has put into us. And however we define our roles, it would be a mistake, it would be wrong, it would be rebellious to not define our roles wisely in light of the real objective difference that God has created between me and my wife. And that happens at two levels, though, of course. One is the sexual differences, but then there's also individual differences, just differences that exist because we are unique individual human beings. And that's going to have a huge impact on the roles that we define for ourselves. I can remember at one point my wife coming to me and saying, well, the kids are mine until, I can't remember exactly if she gave an age or until they get to middle school or something like that, and then they're yours. I'm going to turn them over to you. And what she meant by that is, as they were going through and facing and confronting the problems of their life, and she was primarily thinking of their education, there was going to come a point in their education where she didn't feel as comfortable being their primary source of help and support, and that I was going to have to do that. And in fact, that's sort of more or less the way it worked out, that when they got into middle school and into high school, I would help them with their homework, and I would help them. My wife would still help them with the social aspects of their life, but their intellectual, educational, academic life, I would take responsibility for that. Well, why was that the case? Because I was the father or the husband? No, it's just because it made sense, given who we were as individuals, that was my life, that was my occupation, that my whole life is devoted to education. It made sense for me to do that, to play that role in the life of my children. The roles there could have been completely reversed. If my wife were the professional educator and that was her main occupation, it would make perfectly good sense for her to play that role in the lives of our middle schoolers and high schoolers. So individual differences need to be taken into account as we define our roles. The cultural roles that are defined, if we lived in a different culture where roles were very carefully defined by our culture, would it be wrong to respect those cultural definitions of roles? No, not necessarily. I'm glad I don't live in such a tight, restrictive culture. I'm glad I live in a culture that allows a lot more for individual differences in the way we define our roles. But it wouldn't be wrong to, if we didn't live in that kind of culture, to simply fall into the cultural expectations and patterns. And as a husband and wife lived with one another in an understanding way, in their own subtle kinds of ways, they could break out of the mold of their culture. But it certainly wouldn't be wrong to take traditional definitions seriously. I also think that roles will evolve and change during the course of a marriage relationship. And I think legitimately, validly so. Early in our marriage, my wife kept our books and basically managed our finances. But there came a point in our relationship where it seemed wise for me to take that over. The reason being that we were experiencing a lot of financial pressure, and since I was having to make decisions about what was I going to do to address our financial needs, it was very important that I be faced into the reality of our financial needs, that I not just sort of be oblivious to it and out of touch with our financial needs, that I know what our financial needs were, so that I knew when I needed to take action to address, to do something about meeting those needs. It was one thing for my wife to face into the needs and for me to be having to address them. And she felt more comfortable with our situation if I could be the one having to write the checks, not knowing whether we could we'd have enough money to make it through the end of the month. So we made a transition there where I began taking care of our books. Just life experience itself, it seems to me, will dictate what's the wisest division of labors.
What comes to mind for me right there as an example is about, oh, maybe 5 years into our marriage, my husband went back to school to get a master's degree in counseling psychology. He had been a pastor previous to that. And so where he and I had both shared the responsibility, the financial responsibility, and the house responsibilities pretty much equally, he became a person who was both working to make money. We had a small child, so I wasn't working very much at all then, and he was going to school. So the transition was that I became more of an at-home mom and supported him in just helping him, you know, have enough stamina to go through all that he needed to during the day. That was a pretty easy transition for me. I pretty much welcomed the idea of not working and, as I said earlier, enjoying the idea of being a mother and having that real urge in me. What became more difficult was when he got out of school and we were both working, and I had been doing almost all of the home tasks, and it was a real difficulty for us to move back into a more mutual, where we shared the responsibility at home more. And that was a real bumpy time in our relationship, and trying to get that back into a place where it was more shared. That's the work of marriage.
Marriage is an ever-changing thing as we face new challenges and face new situations.
Very, very much so. And as it's ever-changing, we need to understand that our responsibilities will change.
Jack and Christine will return in a moment. Imagine taking head-on the greatest thinkers of Western civilization. Sounds daunting, doesn't it? But that's just what they do at Gutenberg College. Working closely with their teachers, students at Gutenberg read and discuss the great books of our history. But why? Can such an education guarantee one a good job? At Gutenberg College, they believe one's college education should first and foremost be a doorway to a good life. The question then is, what's a good life? The Gutenberg staff believes a good life begins with the pursuit of wisdom rather than mere knowledge. At Gutenberg, the student's character is as important as his intellectual growth. Now, Gutenberg isn't for everyone, but if you are interested in reading and discussing the greatest thinkers, philosophers, poets, and theologians of Western civilization, if you're interested in working personally with your teachers, and if you want to open the doorway to a good life, ask about Gutenberg College. Most of the Gutenberg staff also teach at McKenzie Study Center. At McKenzie, you will find classes, seminars, conferences, counseling, tapes, and articles, all focused toward knowing and applying God's Word to everyday experiences. Information will be given at the end of today's program on how you can contact Gutenberg College and McKenzie Study Center. Right now, let's get back to Jack and Christine.
To kind of draw to a close what we're saying here today, what I've been trying to suggest is that just as we can get lazy and try to short-circuit the involved, sometimes difficult process of getting to know my wife as a different person, as a different creature than I am. We can take the same kind of lazy shortcut in marriage. We can get our culture to define my role as a husband and as a father, or we can get my culture to define for me what is my role as a wife and a mother, without really taking seriously who I am as a creature made by God, both as a woman or a man, and as an individual. And that it seems to me in the end, it's my responsibility to work together with my wife to define the roles in my relationship that fit who I am as an individual and who I am as a man, and that fit her as a woman and her as an individual. So ultimately, that's going to look very different for different couples. We make a huge mistake when we set up one standard, set up my own marriage, for example, as a standard to judge other marriages by, and say, because they don't do things the way I do things, there's something wrong, there's something sinful about their relationship, there's something amiss there. I'm not the standard for how marriages should look. My marriage is not the standard for how marriages should look, nor is their marriage the standard for how mine should look. There are certain basic principles that we have to take seriously, certain basic objective realities that we have to take seriously. But beyond that, I think God has built in the freedom that comes from having created different individuals who come together in marriage. The fixed realities is the reality that God has given the responsibility of headship to the husband, and he's created men to be men and women to be women. And without even being able to articulate a theory about what that difference is, it's a reality that we have to get to know and become wise about and understanding about. Once we've done that and we take that reality seriously, then I think there's a great deal of freedom in defining the roles in our marriage.
One of the things that you just said that I'd like to piggyback on, Jack, that I really love, is that you said your marriage is not the standard by which anyone should judge a marriage, nor is anyone else's marriage the standard. That's really freeing. It allows us to live in an understanding way with our spouses, to get to understand myself, to get to understand my spouse, and to, out of that understanding, build a marriage that's a good marriage, build a marriage that is a responsible marriage, build a marriage where two people are headed toward maturity, where two people are headed toward oneness. That's where we're going. We're not looking for a boilerplate of what it should actually look like, and everybody then should be a pattern after everyone else. Except for, we should be headed toward these goals of godliness, of oneness, of maturity.
You have been listening to Christianity at Work, a radio ministry of Mackenzie Study Center. If you would like a free copy of this program, or would like to know more about Mackenzie Study Center or Gutenberg College, you may call us at area code 541-485-4801. You can write to us at 1883 University Street, Eugene, Oregon, 97403. And we're also on the Internet. Look for us under Mackenzie Study Center or Gutenberg College. If you didn't have time to write all that down, I'll repeat it again in just a moment. The Mackenzie staff has worked for years studying the Bible, understanding the world we live in, and pursuing what it means to be a Christian. They desire that their ministry may be valuable to others, but they also know that their efforts are in deep need of God's mercy. You can join the Mackenzie staff through classes, seminars, tapes, and papers. The Mackenzie Study Center is a non-profit ministry entirely funded by the generous contributions of people who believe in its goals and have benefited from its ministry. If you would like to make a gift to Mackenzie, it will be entirely tax deductible. Just mail your check to Mackenzie Study Center, 1883 University Street, Eugene, Oregon, 97403. If you would like to call and request a free taped copy of today's program, the telephone number is 541-485-4801. Now, on behalf of Dr. Jack Crabtree, Christine Barber, and the other staff of Mackenzie Study Center,
Thank you for listening.